Hello there. It's been several months since my last show. The reason for the delay, you may or may not already know, is that my wife and I had twins in June, born more than 3 months early. And they've been recovering and growing in the NICU, first in Washington, D.C., where we were on a road trip when it happened, and now here in New Haven, where we live. They're still at the hospital, but it looks like the boy, my son Hank, might come home in just a few weeks, while the girl, my daughter Winnie, might need a bit longer. But when they do get home, they'll get to meet for the first time their siblings, my other older son, Nolan, and my older daughter, Sophia. Anyway, thanks for sticking with the show and coming back for more. Back to the Russia Guy. I'm your host, Kevin Rothrock, and this is a podcast where I talk Russian news, politics, and culture, and I interview various journalists, academics, and activists doing interesting things in the field. Now, before I introduce today's guest, I want to mention that I'm trying something new. I'm adding an automatically generated transcript to this episode. I'm not totally sure how this displays to readers. You probably have to view it in a web browser at buzzsprout.com, which is where the show is hosted. I don't know how many people will want this, but it's not really much extra work for me. So, Bob's your uncle. Moving on today's show, I welcome back Anton Barbashin, a political analyst focusing on Russia, and he's the editorial director at Riddle. If you're not already doing it, I strongly encourage listeners to subscribe to Anton's Twitter account, or just to make a point of following his work online at Riddle or wherever you can find it. He's a very sharp guy, a much better Russia guy than I am, and he's very even-tempered too, which is always nice. Now, because Anton has such a good grasp of Russia's expert community, particularly when it comes to foreign policy, I reached out to him last week and asked him if he would do this interview. So I set up this interview as my grand return to podcasting. A bit of context before diving in here. Last month, Anton shared an article published by the Valdai Club by Ivan Timofeyev. Timofeyev, if you don't know him, he's the program director of the Valdai Discussion Club. He's also the director of programs at RIAC, and Anton talks about RIAC in the interview to come, which is, that is, by the way, the Russian International Affairs Council. And Timofeyev is also an associate professor at the Moscow State Institute of International Relations. Okay, so, oof. Too much exposition or whatever here. But so this article, right, by Ivan Timofeyev, it is about the predominance of realism in Russian foreign policy expertise. And Timofeyev argues that realism isn't really enough for Russia today, at least as a response to the West and to various global problems like climate change and, you know, new economic linkages, global stuff like that. I mention this because over the course of the interview, I got the sense that some of the ideas in this article influenced a lot of our conversation. So I figured it would be useful to clue you in now. Okay, on with the show. First question I have is really long-winded, so just bear with me, and then I'm going to ask you to expound. But so in May, this year in May, you tweeted that you see a lot of research about Russian foreign policy thinking that tries to divide, you know, like all the expertise into what you called it three conditional groups, and you divided it into the Karaganovites, they're aggressive, and they're expansionists, and this is named after Sergei Karganov, the dean of the World Economy and International Affairs Department at Moscow's Higher School of Economics. And then you've got, second up, you've got the Lukyanovites. They're defensive, and they're isolationist, and they're named after Fyodor Lukyanov, the research director at the Valdai International Discussion Club, and he's the chairman of the Presidium of the Council on Foreign Relations and Defense Policy. And then finally, on this list that you had the Treninites. They're opportunists, and they're reconciliatory, and they're, of course, named after Dmitry Trenin, who is the director of the Carnegie Moscow Center. Okay, so those are the three groups that you laid out. But you argued that the foreign policy discourse in Russia has actually centralized tremendously, or there's been tremendous centralization, is what you wrote. And this happened, you said, since 2014. I assume you mean since the annexation of Crimea. And you say that the arguments in the field now essentially revolve around accessory issues that have little strategic importance, is what you said. So this is that's to summarize a tweet that you wrote in May, or two tweets, I think. And I was hoping that I could get you to just sort of explain this a bit more, because the ideas here seem very big to me, and I know that you're extremely well read when it comes to, you know, all this stuff that you're talking about in these tweets. And so I was hoping to just get you to explain what you mean when you talk about this convergence of Russian foreign policy, the supposed schools of thought in Russian foreign policy, and how they're not actually that different. What do you mean?
The original tweet you're referring to from May was basically my reflection of the way that I see some foreign experts, Western experts, academics looking at Russian foreign policy debates and trying to see those sort of groups that are trying to whether counter each other or to propose different versions of foreign policy for the Russian leadership, that in fact there isn't much. Well, first of all, let's kind of make it clear that those groups, whoever they are, however you want to quantify them and label them, they are not the ones that are making the decisions. They're not the ones that actually influence the decision, or do to a very limited degree, and it is almost impossible to determine to which degree and on what particular decisions, but they do to a certain degree, again, reflect some of the discussions that are being held within the decision-making circles. And you have various sort of approaches. I would go into summarizing that, you know, the May tweet, you could just discard that because it was more on how others think of Russia. But I think what is important now, and it's been crystallized in the past few months, is that there's one large sort of group of people who are essentially realists, or try to frame themselves as realists, the ones that just see the world for what it is, see Russia for what it is, and are trying to create a vision where Russia is successful. And success is determined, of course, in the amount of power Russia can project, the amount of respect that Russia gets in foreign policy deals and just foreign policy relationships and such. And this is the group that is to a certain degree framing the official narrative. And if some of you will listen to this podcast, read Russian recent documents on national security concept, you'd see a lot about the sort of very kind of realist in their understanding approach to that the world is sort of in chaos and Russia needs to defend itself, but in order to be to better defend itself, it needs to be assertive, it needs to be able to project power, so on and so forth. It's all about kind of very 19th century understanding of what foreign policy is. And from what we could surmise, this is to a certain degree reflective of what the senior leadership of the country thinks of international relations. But there's another group within the field, the ones that are commenting, writing reports, doing all the sort of think tankish work, that are saying like, look, yeah, we understand since the annexation of Crimea, there's no debate of where Russia is going. It's going away from the West. It's in confrontation. China is a friend, blah, 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 blah. There are also all sorts of nuances here, and we can discuss that in a great length. But their arguing is that, look, this is all great, but this is not enough. This is not moving Russia forward in terms of Russian economic development. Russia's losing people. We have number of problems that are going to arise from the inevitable crisis with the way that Russian economy is structured, and the oil and gas is eventually are going to either run out or people would not need it in the quantities they need today, and thus the whole kind of concert collapses. And they are arguing that, look, realism is great, but it's just not enough. So let's be open about just, you know, let some things could not be as axiomatic as they are today under the Putin's leadership. Of course, they're not saying that those words directly. They're just saying that, let's not think that we know the answers to all the questions.
So would you say that when thinking about the schools of thought in Russian foreign policy expertise, is it most useful to, I mean, because in this tweet, I know that this is not representative necessarily how you view the various camps, but do you think it's more useful to think of it in terms of leaders of opinion with these, you know, particular individuals at the head, or is it more useful to think of it in kind of more intellectual terms? Like, oh, there are, like, as you mentioned, you know, there are realists, and then there's whatever else there's room for. I mean, that seems to be more the direction you're leaning then. Is that right? And that you think is it wrong then to say, oh, there are, you know, these particular kind of stars of the field and everybody kind of gravitates to one of them?
Well, they're just two separate issues. So one is basically how people look at Russians, the Russians that comment on Russian foreign policy. And they could be flavored differently, but they all speak the same language, or they're all kind of servicing the same end and pretty much trying to set the divide between Karaganov, Drinin, and Lukyanov at times is irrelevant, because they are all speaking the same language, the same sort of realism they're trying to preach. Just the flavoring is different. And by trying to look too much into the actual words they use or phrasing and trying to determine whether they represent various opinions on foreign policy, I think is just leading us away from the real discussion about what sort of direction Russian foreign policy is heading.
I know you mentioned before that their disagreements are kind of over these, like, inconsequential issues. For listeners, can you give me a sense of just, like, what's one of the things? Because I, like, you know, maybe it's a lot of, like, what is it? The phrase is like storm clouds and teacups or something like that. Making a big thing out of something that's small. That seems to be what animates a lot of the disagreements, the apparent disagreements between, like you said, Trenin and Lukyanov and Karaganov. Like, what are some of these small kind of inconsequential disagreements that they have?
Well, it's, for instance, when Lukyanov and Karaganov would be writing about, say, Russia's approach to China, one would argue that, look, let's embrace them fully, Karaganov, and saying that, look, that is also an issue of our Russian identity, and we need to go really kind of deep into creating a huge ideological component to this relationship, and we need to preach that ideological component to the Russian people, create this new ideology, and just torn Russia apart from Europe, not only in terms of actual politics, but in terms of norms and values, and create an entire kind of different beast out of Russian society and how it views our relationship with China, the Asian identity. And this will allow us to kind of shift closer to the creation of greater Eurasia, or greater Asia, depending on the context. And that's how we win the 21st century. Technically being junior partner of China, but doing it in the way that is not exactly unflattering to the people in the Kremlin. While Lukyanov per se or others in the same field would say that, look, yeah, well, we have this relationship with China. Nothing is possible. Nothing that the West could offer us would actually make us alter this relation drastically, because it is beneficial at this point. But look, let's not go too far into creating ideology of any sorts. let alone trying to dig into the Asian roots of Russian mentality or whatever you want to call it. We're still Europeans, and we need to balance this relationship with China, with a slightly better relationship with Europe. And then it kind of goes into new nuance, like where do we see ourselves in 15 years, whether the Russia-China relationship in 15 years would be as good, as beneficial, and as kind of forward-looking as it is now. And let's kind of discuss whether we have a way out, where Karaganov would be saying, look, full on ahead, new identity, greater Eurasia, that's how we win, as I've said, 21st century. But again, on another note, and this is a slightly different story. There is a group of realists, as I say, they are the majority, basically. They are the ones that are being allowed to do foreign policy as think tankers, as researchers, they're being allowed to speak. But even within this group, there are people like Kortunov, Timofeyev, or Vryak, who would, on all the major issues, say the right things, but probably slightly more diplomatic than their kind of more aggressive colleagues. But at the same time, they would raise questions, very important questions, about how do we go further? What do we do with Russian economy? Russian economy and, well, economy in general is kind of the Achilles heel of Russian foreign policy thinking in general, because no one is addressing this issue. It's just like it doesn't exist at all. Like, the whole phenomenon, I think, of Putinism and foreign policy is the result of high oil prices in the early 2000s that allowed to, you know, for the whole thing to boom. And the economy is basically playing a huge part here. It's not the foreign policy that made this possible, it's the economy. But no one seems to be addressing that, because in order to address that, you have a very uncomfortable conversation about what Russia could actually do in terms of its economy, and how China can help Russia with its economy, and or rather why China is not really helpful in terms of addressing Russian economy. But this sort of frustration, China per se, is being now a little bit more evident in the, you know, 2021 than it was in 2015, because it's been, well, now 7 years and the investments are not really coming in. So people are getting slightly less slightly less excited about this relationship.
So, I mean, listening to you talk about this, one question I have is, How does this play out exactly in terms of the influence? I feel like I may have asked you about this before, but I'm going to ask you again because I clearly haven't understood. How does the influence of Russian experts play out in the actual generation of Russian foreign policy and decision making? Like in the United States, I know it's also like a fairly Byzantine system, and I actually worked at a think tank for like 2 years in Washington more than a decade ago, and I still have very little concept of how, you know, like the research that's generated at those institutes somehow influences anything, but I'm aware that it does somehow. Can you explain this process in Russia, there is indeed any kind of influence at all? Or, I mean, so people are sitting down, they're attending conferences, giving talks, you know, doing interviews, writing white papers and so on, that where they argue this or that interpretation of, you know, Russian power potential and options and so on. And then, like, what's the mechanism for any kind of actual influence? Is it just decision makers are reading it over their morning coffee, and then at the meeting later in the day, they say, hey, did you read the Timofeyev thing about how realism isn't all we need? Like, is that how it works, or how does it work?
Well, if...
As far as you know.
You know, if I knew the answer to that question. But essentially what we have, and this is what you would hear from people working within the think tank community, is that they are not influencing the decision-making process. They are sometimes participating in the discussion of certain issues, most of the time about the decisions that were already made. Say, we're doing this with Europe. This is the approach to the new Biden administration. Then the community kind of jumps in, trying to either frame it for the larger audience, either frame it for the government, kind of back and forth, offering some other options, maybe details, maybe nuance, giving it deeper meaning. They could argue within themselves a little bit about how to approach this better. I mean, if you're a Russian foreign policy expert on Syria, Iran, Vietnam, you're probably in more demand because you are, because the, you know, Kremlin doesn't know how to deal with certain niche countries and issues. Not that Vietnam is a niche country, but, or Syria, but still. I mean, but we're, when we're talking about grand policy, when we're talking about Ukraine, Belarus, United States, EU, these are the issues that basically you have presidential administration all over. And thus the think tank community isn't actually doing much in terms of providing, let's say, advice in the way that the Americans would understand it. But they are trying to somehow at times offer sort of competing visions of where it is going, in hopes that some people within the decision-making circles would see it, take it into account, or for some reason would require their advice on one particular issue or another. Say climate. Now, this is the issue that, you know, 2 years ago, nobody would have expected that Russia and the United States would be talking climate together. So now they need people from within the kind of second track diplomacy from think tank community to talk to their counterparts about how do we do climate together. And this where those folks are coming in and offering their ideas, they could be, let's say, in opposition to 90% of things Putin does or says, but they see their place there to offer their 10% of expertise in hopes that it will at least improve or deconflict, or at least leave some doors open for the future. Because the article that you mentioned, the article Timofeyev, is basically, it's a door opening or a window opening for the future. He's talking about sometime in the future where a change would be needed, probably under a new administration. Because he's young, because he has the platform, he's talking to his counterparts in the academic expert community, maybe in MFA, maybe in some other Russian institutions. So my point in showing those kind of discussions is to allow the Russian watchers to see basically that there are some people within the system who, if you apply very kind of rigid rules about who's the, you know, the issue of Crimea, this issue, and if you run this kind of very rigid test, all of them will fail simply because they, you know, work within the Russian political system and there's certain limitation, authoritarian state, blah, blah, blah. But they have very different and differing ideas on what Russia should do next and how it should evolve. And it's not all about war and warheads. And there are groups there, particularly within React, Timofeyev, Kortunov, who always talk about, you know, the need for improvement of Russian kind of human capital, technologies, advancement of the economy. Karaganov, on the other hand, yes, he's talking more warheads. He's talking that next 10 to 15 years, we're going to be in very serious escalation and no one needs international institutions and people who could speak the language of international institutions, who could speak the language that Europeans and Americans understand, because the only language that Russia needs now in their understanding is, you know, warheads, power projection. So that's the actual conflict within the community. But there is no conflict because this is the discussion within the community. There is, to my best understanding, no conflict within the decision-making circle. I mean, they are fine with what they do and they're pretty open, and we are now able to see the statements from, you know, Shoigu, Lavrov, Putin himself about various issues of history, various issues of foreign policies that quite direct and forward. And there is no doubt there is no discussion, but the community, the foreign policy community, think tank community is there to provide options if things change tomorrow. And they're there. So that's good news.
Do you think that if eventually when there's a change of leadership in the Kremlin, will that, if say that somebody came into office who was more like Medvedev in 2008, would the expert community then shift either opportunistically to just have more of an audience with whoever's new in office? Or are there all these kind of, you know, secret sleeping liberal or nationalists and so on and so forth who are posing as realists now who would be happy to kind of come out of their shell? Like, to what extent is it that Russian foreign policy experts are at their core realists? And to what extent is it that everybody's just sort of using the kind of the language that dominates now?
Well, I think there's a great group of people that were kind of liberal internationalists in the 90s, quite honestly, and they got disillusioned for a good number of reasons, and probably they would remain realist. But there's, of course, a great group of people who would not care which cake to bake as long as they can make the money. And this applies to all levels of Russian expertise, governance, and I think they would always just, I mean, if the wind is flying that way, like, sure, why not? Mm-hmm. Let's say that Chinese are bad and Americans are good. But there are some people who believe in what they say, but I do not think they are ever a maturity within this type of systems, whether it's Russia or another country.
Sure. Okay.
I find it quite interesting following the reading. Take one Russian think tank, Valdai, kind of being the one of the biggest one, the most loaded with resources, the most renowned. I mean, if you take the reports for every year, the last 5 years, and read into the way they perceive the world and their conclusions and their offerings, it's such a mess in terms of the evolution of the way they see the world. It is changing constantly. And from one report after another, there are only a few things that remain the same. And it just at times you think that people writing those reports are just experimenting with ideas, or they're just having some sort of midlife crisis. Because honestly, some of the concepts are jumping so drastically from, say, hey, new salt bipolarity is coming. It's US and China, and Russia somewhere in between. And let's just do something about our relationship with China so that we don't look as a junior partner while we would be, in fact, China's junior partner. The next year they come out and say, look, the entire world is going to hell. It's all chaos. Nothing is possible. Let's just arm ourselves and prepare for the worst. And I don't know what would be the next year. I mean, maybe the next year it would be all about the history of Poltava, and I don't know why we should do something about Sweden. But there is a lot of trying to appease the people that are actually making the decisions within those reports. And it takes quite a skill to read between the lines to actually understand where their analytical component exists. And I think many of our colleagues fail to see the propaganda component, both for domestic and foreign audiences equally, and actually read what the people think. Mm-hmm. The problem that we're talking less, I mean, Russians and Americans on all sort of levels, including the levels of experts, is a big problem, because it creates a huge, I think, vacuum of understanding between each other, between what people actually think. The more informal those communications could be, the better. And I think it's quite crucial, because we are from the Russian part seeing a certain departure of people at the very top of the state towards very quasi-religious historical concepts that are starting to dominate the discourse and are kind of heading towards really, really creating an ideology, something that was unthinkable almost throughout the entire presidency of Vladimir Putin, because he seemed like the guy that understands that ideology is something that Russia does not need. Realism preaches that Russia does not need ideology. But still, in the last couple of years, it seems that's where we are heading. And it would be quite wise for Russia's counterparts in the United States and in Europe to keep tap on what the people close to the circle think, and just to make sure that this is, you know, evolving in the direction it does, and if it does, to make, you know, appropriate changes to the behavior and general posture.
In terms of reading between the lines to try to get a sense of what either experts are saying when they write something or what politicians mean when they say something, do you think it's possible to know how to do that just by following it closely enough with what's publicly available? Or do you think it's necessary to kind of be talking to people sort of privately, I guess? Like, one of the things I find is that I'll read an article by somebody and I'll think, okay, well, I guess I understood that. And then I'll go on Telegram just out of curiosity to see what people are saying about it. And someone will say, oh, well, he meant this because of this and that. And I'll think, oh, wow, I did not get that at all. And I wonder if it's just because I'm not reading carefully enough, or if it's because so much is unsaid, goes unsaid, that you really do need to be having lunch with somebody or talking to somebody who had lunch with somebody to figure out what they actually meant. Or like, what's your approach? Do you feel like if you read carefully enough, you can get it? Or do you find that it does require connections of sorts to be talking to people informally?
Well, I think it was much easier reading what they were writing 10 years ago than it is now, for sure. So in many cases, you need to understand the context of who they are, who they represent. For example, that, you know, if you're reading something by Portnov, for, you know, Timofeev, that Ryak is connected to the MFA, who is the actual president of Ryak now, what were his views previously? And all those little details help you understand what they might be implying in this case or another. You could reference to another couple of experts who know the situation better, who know them or remember them from the 90s, to get their sense of how they read what they're writing. So it's always, you know, it requires a skill, it requires a certain knowledge of the community. Preferably knowing them in person would help, but it is not always an option, and it would be less of an option for the most of us in the foreseeable future. But you probably need to read quite a few opinions about one piece just to make sure that you understood it correctly, and still it could not be what the person actually meant.
Right.
So there's a lot of guessing going around here. There's no theory that actually helps kind of decrypting. You would probably find a few folks who would say that, look, I've read that stuff back in the Soviet era. I understand how the Russians write between the lines. And maybe we're heading towards that direction. I don't know. I was born, well, still in the Soviet Union, but, you know, I'm learning this in you, same as you, unfortunately.
Right.
So yeah, it requires certain skill.
That's my interview with Anton Barbashin, a political analyst focusing on Russia and the editorial director at Riddle. Thank you for listening, everybody. And extra thanks to those of you still contributing on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/KevinRothrock. I've suspended the billing for the last few months, but I'm gonna let it ride again here in September. But I suspended it because I wasn't doing the show. But we're back on, baby. Please stay tuned, because on the next show, which I've already recorded, but I still need to edit, I'll be speaking to the authors of a new book titled Navalny, Putin's Nemesis, Russia's Future, ? And that book just came out last month, and I talked to all three authors. So please come back and listen for that. I'm going to release that show next week. Thank you again for listening. Until next time.
Говорят мы пяки-буки, как выносит нас земля. Дайте, что ли, карты в руки, погадать на короля.
Ой-ля-ля, ой-ля-ля.